Along with houses and people, the modern suburban landscape brought new concerns over natural disaster. Before large numbers of people began living there, little had been written about the frequency and impacts of floods and debris flows in the valley. Although there was documented incidents of flooding in 1940, 41, 52, and 56. Flooding and debris flow events most likely occurred at regular intervals during the wet winter months, since before the arrival of the Olone. But because most of the land was either agricultural or uninhabited, the financial costs were low or nil, and people took such occurrences as a matter of course. With new homes and stores, some built adjacent to the creeks or on the old lake bed or at the mouths of the numerous small draws in the hillsides, the financial costs were to change. The first major natural disaster to Linda Marr occurred on Saturday, October 13th, 1962. It had been raining for the past few days throughout the Bay Area, with totals over a four-day period for Pacifica ranging from over 11 inches up to 22 inches. Debris flows let loose in a number of San Pedro's smaller valleys, inundating frontier land at the top of the North Fork, the Gaze Trout Farm on the South Fork, and several other homes, and a barn with mud and water. Floodwaters surged through all of the small creeks and converged in the main stem of San Pedro Creek. Street storm drains that emptied into the creeks had not had their annual clean-out by the city, and water quickly backed up onto the streets. The end result was major flooding at the Linda Marr Shopping Center and in the Anza Arguello neighborhood, where Lake Matilde once stood. Water in some places was chest deep, and up to 200 people were evacuated. At two locations along the beach, pumps had been constructed to help with street runoff in anticipation of such an event. But these pumps were quickly overwhelmed and stopped operating as creek waters rose. The flood damaged 85 homes and 5 businesses in the shopping center and destroyed the trout farm and frontier land. In less than an hour, water and mud crumpled the farm's metal fish rearing tanks, filled in the pond and the creek channel, and killed over 25,000 young fish, many of them being spread over the meadows just downstream from the farm. Frontier land was almost wiped off the map. Mud flowed into stables, forcing the evacuation of horses, and filled the riding ring with so much mud that the once chest-high fence could easily be stepped over. 10 tons of hay was washed away, and the owners were left looking for people to board the park's horses. Fortunately, no one was killed or seriously hurt by the mud and water. Some residents blamed the city for not cleaning out storm drains, providing better drainage, or building better pumps, while others attributed the flood to an act of God. Everyone agreed, however, that the storm produced an unusual amount of rain. Floods came again to Linda Marr on October 11, 1972, 36 hours to the day of the 1962 flood. In the months prior to the flood, the capacity of the pumping stations had been increased and a backup power supply added. Frank Sampson of the Department of Public Works said the improvements would virtually negate the possibility of another major flood. In the edition printed the night before the flood, the Pacifica Tribune wrote for residents to relax, a flood in Linda Marr was not likely to happen, Barnard 1982A. However, as the rains intensified during the night and early morning hours, water again overwhelmed the pumping stations and they stopped operating. Floodwaters once again rose, and just before dawn, the Linda Marr Shopping Center and homes in the Anza Arguello area again were flooded. Further confusion ensued when the telephones went out and residents were not aware of flood warnings until water was at their doorstep. However, the flood was not nearly as bad as the 1962 flood, with only a half dozen homes being flooded on Anza Drive and damage estimates to homes and businesses did not exceed $100,000. On January 4th to 5th, 1982, flooding came for a third time to Linda Marr. Rainfall figures for a 24 period exceeded totals from the 1962 storm, with 4.47 inches falling at San Pedro Valley County Park from Monday to Tuesday. Again, the pumping stations were overwhelmed and stopped operating, and by early Tuesday morning, the Lindemar Shopping Center and the Anza Arguello neighborhood again were flooded. One Anza Arguello resident claimed that once the pump stopped working, flood waters rose as fast as 1 foot in 15 minutes. 80 residents were forced to seek temporary overnight shelter at Terra Nova High School. Water in the shopping center was waist-deep in places. Schools were closed Tuesday due to flooding, and a carnival atmosphere came over the shopping center, temporarily called Lake Lindemar, as teens converged with rafts, bikes, boats, and four-wheel drive vehicles. One picture in the Pacifica Tribune shows teenagers driving four-wheel drive pickup trucks, shouting and laughing as their trucks plow through water up to the tops of the wheel wells in the shopping center parking lot. Another shows two people in a rowboat floating past partially submerged pumps at a gas station. Floodwaters surging through San Pedro Creek seriously damaged the Adobe Drive Bridge and destroyed the Peralta Road Bridge. The 1982 storm, considered a 100-year event, also brought the deadly potential of debris flows to the valley. Three children were killed when a debris flow raced down a narrow 400-foot-long draw, pushing a neighbor's house off its foundation and into the Velez home at 1249 Odstad Boulevard. Another debris flow on Valdez Way sent tons of mud, branches, small boulders, and gravel down the street, pushing aside cars and leaving a 3-foot-deep pile of debris at the end of the street where it intersects with Rosita Way. The potential for such debris flows was known. A 1970 San Mateo County map done by the engineering firm of Howard Donley Associates shows that a debris flow could happen at the draw above the Velez home, as well as numerous other areas throughout San Pedro Valley. However, Donley, who was hired as a geology consultant by the city of Pacifica, stated that the debris flows caused by the storm caught the professionals by surprise, as did some 200 other mud or landslides throughout Pacifica, and that the storm was of monumental proportions, putting it in the act of God category in Pacifica. He defended the builders and engineers who built the homes, stating, "They could not have known or challenged the stability of a nearby hill that had survived storms and earthquakes for thousands of years." Drake, 1982. Damage totals for Pacifica from the storm was in the millions of dollars, with 300 homes damaged and 4 destroyed, and 60 businesses damaged. 3 major floods in 2 decades, and the deadly debris flows of 1982 started to make some residents wonder if houses belonged in San Pedro Valley and Pacifica. Bill Drake, a Pacifica Tribune reporter, wrote a month after the 1982 storm, "It's a new kind of shadow for Pacifica, as residents there protect their homes from a frightening menace hidden somewhere in the skies and the hills. They are the very same soft and scenic hills that helped attract us all here in the first place, and which now, as one Pacifican put it last week, have seemed to turn upon us. Should Pacifica collectively have a guilty conscience? Did this city, just moving into its 25th year as a corporate entity, do something wrong or fail to do something that could have prevented the deaths of 3 children in a crushed home? Why did Anza Drive suffer for the 3rd time in 2 decades a damaging flood?" The photograph accompanying Drake's article shows a Park Pacifica resident sweeping sand on Grand Teton Drive. Sand had been dumped on the street and used to fill sandbags, which now line the curb 3 bags high. The sandbags were an attempt to protect the homes from a potential slide area farther uphill. Other residents, years later, were able to smile about having to evacuate their homes and about the marina-like ambiance that overcame their neighborhoods. However, the floods forced a number of others to move away. Longtime residents of the Anza Arguello neighborhood, who despite the floods still felt that Lindemar was a great place to live and bring up children, regretted that so many people left after the 1982 floods. The Godsoes, who bought their house on Balboa Way in 1954, acknowledged that most of the homes on their street were still owner-occupied. On Anza Way, one block west and a little lower in elevation, however, it is mostly all newcomers and renters. Some of the Anzaway homes were submerged up to their ceilings when the 1982 floodwaters came. In response to the floods, the San Pedro Flood Control Committee, working with the Army Corps of Engineers, released its feasibility and recommendation report in 1985. The report acknowledged that the pumps were not adequate to handle floodwaters from San Pedro Creek and identified a series of potential mitigation measures. The measure finally recommended involved creating a low levee on the north bank, a sacrificial flood plain on the south bank along the lower reaches of San Pedro Creek, and replacement of the Highway 1 bridge. The pilings built when the road was constructed obstructed high water flows from the creek. A photograph in the Pacifica Tribune, taken during the 1962 flood, shows creek waters just below the bridge's roadbed and a large crane reaching over the bridge lifting buckets of water and debris. The caption reads, "Opening up Pedro Creek." This equipment helped save the day. Excavation for the floodplain was planned for west of the new Peralta Road Bridge, and a diversion channel within this floodplain would be added starting west of the Linda Mar Care Center Convalescent Hospital. The mouth of the creek would be widened west of Highway 1 as it emptied out into the ocean. The additional floodplain and channel widening would give floodwaters a place to go and slow flood velocities down, decreasing the erosion force of the waters. The levee on the north bank was recommended to help protect the shopping center and homes on the north bank of the creek. The major obstacle in the way of implementing the project was money, and several years later, the project was still not funded. To counterbalance the spread of homes across the valley during the 1960s and 70s, a new type of development was proposed, a regional county park. San Mateo County had started purchasing land for the park back in the 1970s. Although the park preserved part of the valley's more rugged landscape, its establishment also reflected a desire to secure a local water supply. Back in the early 1950s, the NCCWD had been interested in using water from San Pedro Creek and wanted to build a filtration plant to make practical use of the millions of gallons of Pedro Creek water now splashing into the ocean. It was awarded limited water rights on the South Fork, but had to divert water downstream from the Gay's Trout Farm, where it was too contaminated for domestic use. The NCCWD calculated that in order to make using water from the South Fork feasible, it needed to control about 410 acres of watershed land. During the 1960s, federal programs were instituted that made it financially possible for the NCCWD to apply for grants and loans. The Gays, whose trout farm had been wiped out in the 1962 flood, still owned 21 acres of land, and were leasing some of it for growing watercress for San Francisco markets. They were resistant to selling and were opposed to the NCCWD's plans, but the NCCWD purchased the Gays' land by eminent domain and by the end of 1967 had more than 410 acres along the South Fork. The district built its filtration plant near the confluence of the Middle and South Forks, where the Gays had their first trout farm. The NCCWD was also talking to the county about purchasing 478 acres of watershed land along the Middle Fork to be used as a wilderness park. If the county agreed to do this, the NCCWD would lease its lands along the South Fork to the county to be incorporated into a larger park. Using the watershed lands as a park would protect the water quality and prohibit development. The NCCWD was also considering building two dams on the Middle Fork in 1968, but the projects proved not to be cost-effective. The county started purchasing land from a variety of property owners in the 1970s, and a 99-year lease with the NCCWD was signed, creating San Pedro Valley County Park. The Weiler Ranch, which was some of the last land in the valley still being farmed, growing artichokes and a small fruit orchard, was converted over to park use. The old ranch house and outbuildings were torn down, and the home site was used for the Walnut Grove Group picnic grounds. The ranch's agricultural fields that spread along the Middle Fork were allowed to become grassy meadows, although the grasses are mostly non-native annual species. the county built the park's visitor center and parking lot on parts of the old trout farm, and the Gaze House was converted into a ranger's quarters. The creeks and hillsides of the park were in a deteriorated state. County rangers had to remove large appliances from the creeks and do erosion control along the stream banks to counteract the effects of using them as a dump. The Coastside Sportsmen's Association, which was run by Good Old Boys, owned 75 acres of land about halfway up the north side of Montara Mountain. In 1966, the association rented bulldozers to clear a road up to the property. This was done without permits and left a wide swath of disturbed land, clearly visible in a 1968 aerial photograph, figure 26, for years after its construction. The county was eventually able to purchase the land to incorporate into the park. Off-road motorcycles also used the hillsides as a recreation ground, and the sound of their engines could be heard echoing off the hills when kids were out from school. In 1973, Christine Case, a Skyline College biology instructor, started studying the park's creeks, and in 1977 applied for grants to develop a video and teaching materials about the ecology of the creeks to be used at the new park's visitor center. For Case, the creeks and their surrounding watersheds were a rustic area filled with ecological treasures. She acknowledged that to children, the park's creeks seemed nothing but a dirty, polluted stream, a place to throw a handful of trash or an empty beer can. Her goal was to work to help change people's perceptions of the creeks through education. By 1980, as the park opened, Ranger David Moore felt that the creeks within the new park were probably cleaner than they had been in 60 years. There's no man-made debris in it. After several years of cleanup preparing the park for opening day, the area had been restored to a healthy condition after many years of use as a free dump. San Pedro Valley County Park was planned as a low-intensity use park, and about 97% of the approximate 1,000-acre park is undeveloped. Figure 26, 1968, USGS aerial photo showing San Pedro Valley. The Sportsmen's Association land and the road leading to it are shown below and right of center, USGS 1968B. Hiking and riding, picnicking, informal field sports, and social gatherings were the types of activities intended for the mostly flat valley section of the park. Because close to half the park is on NCCWD watershed land, uses within the park must be compatible with protecting the watershed. There are about 10 miles of hiking trails within the park, although not all the trails were constructed when the park opened. The trails were designed by Harry Dean, the county's park planner. At the time of construction, some of the chaparral was so thick that rangers used chainsaws and that their uniforms were blackened by the heavy oil from poison oak. In late 1979, a short, self-explanatory nature trail opened that was also handicapped accessible. The trail has 20 trail posts that are keyed to a handout with descriptions of trailside vegetation. In October of 1990, the 2.5-mile Montara Mountain Trail opened, which took 4 months to hack out of the chaparral and poison oak-covered mountainside. The trail was carefully designed to draw hikers up and away from civilization. Over the years, numerous articles have praised the park and recommended it as a destination. Chris Hunter of the Pacifica Tribune perceived the park's entrance as a gateway to a forested Shangri-La, and further noted, the impressive reality of so much natural, unspoiled landscape so close to San Francisco is heartening in this age of asphalt and steel. During the winter and spring months, after the rains have started, a long, thin waterfall known as Brooks Falls develops over one of the steep escarpments on the north flank of Montara Mountain. Hunter described the falls as creating even more of a lost jungle atmosphere, Hunter 1990. Tom Steenstra wrote, "Just 20 minutes south of San Francisco is a secluded setting where visitors are few. The coastal beauty is divine, and hikers can carve out their own personal slice of heaven. and that the park is a backyard wilderness that is often overlooked. Ranger Dennis Hanley mentioned seeing mountain lion, bobcat, coyotes, fox, and deer. The Weiler Ranch Trail is handicapped accessible, and Hanley observed, "Children in a wheelchair love it because they can get down and feel the grass in the meadow and often see deer and other animals." The Pacifica Tribune tourist and resident guide describes the park as virtually a tiny Yosemite. The park offers respite from harried urban life. The city of Pacifica built other parks and smaller recreation facilities in San Pedro Valley. In 1960, the city council awarded a grant to start construction of Odstad Park on Crespi Drive at the top of the hill above Sanchez's Adobe. The park was built with a concrete block restroom building, some picnic tables, and a children's playground. In 1972, plans were drawn up for a park to be built behind Odstad School at the end of Yosemite Drive on the old Bernardi dump site. This park was given the name Frontierland Park, in memory of Frontierland that used to be located just north of the site. Facilities for the park included group and individual picnic sites, volleyball and tennis courts, an outdoor theater, horseshoe pits, a nature center, a small pond, and an animal farm to be sponsored by the local 4-H Club, most of which was never built. September of 1987 saw the opening of Pacifica's Community Center. The city purchased the Bell Telephone Building on Crespi Drive, which had been abandoned due to seeping groundwater, Pacifica Tribune, 1986. In 1994, COACH, City's Organized Athletes Coalition to Help, started raising funds to buy the old Sanchez School site from the Laguna Salada Union School District. They wanted to demolish the buildings and convert the site into playing fields for football/soccer and Little League baseball. The old school buildings were instead converted to the Sanchez Art Center and a Montessori school. Other projects, even though well-intentioned, never came to pass. In 1962, the Laguna Salada Union School District took by eminent domain 43 acres of Pito Ranch that abounds in glens and marsh areas where a small stream trickles through. Part of the ranch property had become the Willowbrook Estates, and the school district wanted part of the property in anticipation of needing more classroom space. However, a school was never built, and some of the old farm buildings were used to store Park Division equipment. By early 1975, a totally different plan was created for the property. The school district wanted to get a grant to convert the property to a nature classroom with museum facilities. The plans called for 80 small plots to be built for community organic gardening, a summer day camp for 8 to 12-year-olds, a family hiking program, and an educational program where students could learn about natural history and people's role in the environment. While waiting for funding, some of the land and buildings were loaned to the local 4-H Club. By the end, 1977, the club was complaining of vandals killing or stealing their animals, and even of someone taking rifle shots at the animals from a nearby hill. The buildings were in a dilapidated state, and the site had become a headache for the school district, which, if it could not fund the nature programs, would try to sell the property. As noted earlier, by the 1980s, all of the major modern suburban landscape elements were in place. Houses and other development had pretty much reached contemporary aerial extent, although cosmetic changes have occurred over the years. Residents were drawn to Linda Mar and other valley developments partly for affordable houses, but also because of the open space and beauty of the hillsides and coastal mountains. Taines,